Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, listening audience. Thank you for tuning in to Talk Straight and being a part of a national dialogue designed for proactive change. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. I'm grateful again to engage each and every one of you in very important conversation. I need your help as I endeavor to take this message and the conversation we share on air to targeted cities and urban areas across America with the hope and desire to improve the quality of lives by engaging communities and proactive strategies. You can be of great help by going to our webpage, www.bfcinstitute.com. Click on the donation tab or the contact us tab and find ways that you can assist us by either purchasing our items or just making a donation on our secure PayPal site. If you are a business or someone who would like to make a corporate level contribution and you would like more information, please give me a call at 615-498-4669 or send me an email at bfcinstitute@gmail.com. That's bfcinstitute@gmail.com, or give us a call at 615-498-4669. We are glad to share with you and provide you all the necessary information to help you make the decision to support us in our traveling lecture series.
Well, greetings and welcome again to Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery, and we're again here meeting on a Tuesday night, October the 26th, 2021. Y'all heard me talk about how evident it is that time is moving on and how imminent it is that we keep up with time. Here we go. Another month, a few more days, and the 10th month of 2021 is gone. Looked like the turn of the century just started yesterday, but it's only been 21 years, about to go into 22. Some of us were fortunate to see the turn of another century, right? And what we hope for our young people is that they carry the banner and that they keep that thing alive. And perhaps some of them or their offspring, needed offspring, will be the benefactors of yet another turn of the century. All right. So like any form of a living thing, success has a root. Unfortunately, many people lack an understanding of how one grows to become successful at anything. Now, when one looks at the current social economic status of many folk who feel oppressed, have been oppressed, or are oppressed, and suppressed groups that make up the troubled areas of the United States of America, clearly, there's a need for understanding the process of becoming successful. So tonight our topic is the root of success. The root of success. And in intimating this concept, I'll talk largely about planting the seeds because they go hand in hand together. You don't have a root without it, but we'll get into it. 657-383-0944. That is the number to call. I would love for you to join me live in the studio here on blogtalkradio.com, our podcast. Our Facebook friends, those that are following us live on Facebook, please feel free to come on and join us here. Again, the number to call, you can post your question or comments as well on Facebook, but the number to call is 657-383-0944. For the next about hour and maybe 50 minutes, we'll leave the phone lines open. Customarily, I will, as with we do customarily offer a monologue tonight. Give us some background, some context for what we're talking about in terms of the root of success. All right? And then we'll open up the phone lines to you, our listening audience. We're joined tonight by a group out of Louisville, Kentucky. They call themselves the Nappy Roots. Okay, and they got a song entitled Po' Folks. Interesting, interesting. I think it's related to what we're talking about here, about what people go through and the aspiration for success, doing better, improvement, and things of that nature. So I hope you'll find that to be just as relevant to our conversation tonight. All right, October 26, 2021, the root of success. That's what people say they want. That's what people say they want. And my people have a tendency to say it loud, but when we look at their actions, we see something different. So we're going to talk about the root of success and how anybody, listen to what I tell you, anybody can be successful. Say what? I said anybody can be successful. We're going to talk about it. Galatians, the 6th chapter in the 7th verse, reads like this. Be not deceived. God is not mocked. For whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. Let me just put a pen right there for a minute. Let me repeat that. Elohim, God is not mocked. He ain't no fool. He ain't crazy. Whatever man put out, whatever he plants, whatever he works for and produce, that is what he's going to get to come back for him. All right, let me not get too far ahead of myself. We're talking about the root of success. All right, that was Galatians 6 and 7. Now, I told you in order to understand the root, we got to talk about its predecessor, the seed. So a seed is a embryonic or the beginning stage of a plant, and it is enclosed in a protective outer covering. Now, this seed is a byproduct of the process of procreation. In other words, it refers to anything that can be sown or planted in the soil or some type of soil. It should be noted that seed does not generate itself. It don't pop out of nowhere, but rather it is the result of active reproduction, and it has progenitors. Are you with me? Somebody had to do something to get it there. All right, now let's talk about being proactive, which simply means to take action in advance. Don't wait on nothing or nobody to set your success in course. Take your own action in advance so that you can deal with any expected change or difficulty when it comes. If you wait on somebody else, they don't show up, you out of luck. Talk to me, somebody. Yeah. Don't be waiting around on nobody else. You understand what I'm saying? You got to get up and go get it. In order for change to take place, what do you mean change, Doc? What do you mean by change? I'm talking about the resulting of becoming different. Your life, your circumstances, your conditions. If you want that to be different, guess what? You're going to have to do something. Now, I just told you about the seed, right, and it being planted. And as this seed germinates or grows, it forms a root. And you know what the root is, don't you? It's the very thing that holds it, that sustains it in the ground. Help me, Holy Ghost. And from that, it can begin to grow and to expound and to have its thing, to have its way. That's the root. And we want to talk about the rest. We know something's got to be done, and something's got to be planted, something has to be created, but then it has to be maintained. That's where. What is that process of maintaining what we've worked hard for that yields our success? So, you know, the root is simply that part of the plant that grows underground, Watch this now. Watch this. It's not something you see. It ain't going to get a whole lot of glory. And it's not going to happen overnight. But it's underground. It's unseen. But it's working for the good of the plant. Are you with me? Some of us want to get the recognition right now. Want people to feel sorry for. No. You go do your thing. Handle your business. And in time, it will be made manifest what you have done for yourself. I didn't come to preach, but I know I'm right about that. If you stay fast, be steadfast. The text told us that whatever you put in the ground, that's what you're going to see come back. All right. I ain't going to preach. Talking about this root, you got to have some water to keep that thing alive while it's underground. This is what holds your plant, your seed in place. And it's the cause. It's also used in the sense that it is the cause of something, the cause of your success. We'll be talking about in this root here. Now, in this discussion about the roots of success, let's consider four important factors. All right. This is coming from yours truly, Reuben Dockery. You don't have to accept it. It's all right. I wouldn't be mad at you, but I want you to consider. One, in order for a root to serve its function, it is necessary that someone or something produce it through the seed and through the growth of the plant. Somebody got to put work in. Are you with me? That's number one. Number two, once you got that seed, you got to make sure it's on fertile and sturdy ground so that it can be properly secured and the root can hold it and everything that grows from it. If you don't do that, it'll be easy for things to unearth it and disturb its growth and its development. I wish I had a witness here tonight. See, a lot of times we have great ideas, but we are not well established and stable enough to protect the vision that God has given us. Then we wonder, why is it that my dream didn't come to fruition? There is a process that you must follow. These are the factors. One, somebody got to be responsible enough to make it happen. And then you got to secure that thing. Three, you've got to be proactive. And that requires willful, intentional efforts. It's not happenstance. It's not luck. Say that again, doctor. It is not happenstance and it's not luck when you're successful. But that comes from steadfast, resolute efforts. Are you with me? All right. Proaction, willful and intentional efforts. Then lastly, number four, change that you're looking for, success in your actions involves procedural steps and the discipline of mind to follow them. Let me slow down and say that again. The fourth here is that if you want to see change, you want to see the outcome, you want to see success, it requires procedural steps. That means principle order. And in addition to having the principle, you must be disciplined enough to follow those principles. Now, that's where a lot of good people go wrong. They can talk the theory and talk about what has been said and what has been done, but they don't have internally the ability to be disciplined to follow that process. If it worked for somebody else, beloved, it can work for somebody. Say me. Yeah. It can work for you too. And context of those who are or have been oppressed. I'm not saying that you haven't had any problems, that you haven't had challenges, that you hadn't struggled. Heaven knows I have, right? But if you have, guess what? I got good news for you tonight. Brother, you have had problems socially, economically, emotionally, or even politically, spiritually. There is hope for transformation. with the right guidance, with the right leadership that starts with you and the right vision, guess what, beloved? You are in a position to change your circumstances. We can change our families. We can change our neighborhoods. We can change our whole subculture. And let me be clear, though. In order for anyone to take you and make you subject to their will, their desires, you've got to make yourself available to them. What? You've got to make yourself available to them. Learn how to avoid things and people and circumstances that will get you caught up and make you subject to them, like a slave. Learn how to avoid those things. In order for somebody to oppress you or to do something to you, to subjugate you, again, you got to be available. That calls you to have a transformation of mind. All right. Now, I'm not speaking literally here in terms of a plant or an organic seed, but figuratively. I'm speaking from a more philosophical position. About principles in life and the need for individuals to be taught to follow, to embrace, be guided by principle. Because this is the basis for the root of your success. I'm convinced that if used properly, they will lead to proactive and even transformative change, success. You understand what I'm saying? And anyone, I said that at the beginning, anyone can meet success. There is a real process by which you can become successful. I don't care what you're doing. Now, allow me to offer 6 routes to success. 6 routes to success. If you ever saw a plant and you went down in the ground and you saw what was under there as the plant was growing up into its various levels and generations, what you'll find at the very bottom is what look like tenials or extensions that reaches out and grab hold to the dirt. Help me, Holy Ghost. Grab hold to the dirt. Yeah. And that's what keeps that plant stable. I wish I had a witness here tonight. Look. When the roots are good, you plant that thing just right. And the roots go deep down in the soil and find nourishment, it becomes just like a tree planted by the rivers of water. Somebody said, I shall not be moved. Look. Let me talk to you just for a second about 6 principal ideas to the roots. You might even consider that as these extensions goes out, this root grab holds to the soil and eats from the nourishment of the soil and the water and the care from it. That these things will lead to your success. Did I say you could be successful? Yes, I did. Said that about 3 times now. Anybody can be successful. I don't care if you're green, yellow, purple, orange, white, black, whatever you are. You can be successful. Pink, you can be successful. Somebody may not want you to be successful, and they may be hating on you, drinking haterade. That's all right. Care your business, beloved. And you can be successful. Then we're going to hear from Nappy Roots. Listen, number one, you have to, Matt, some folk don't like it when I say this, but it's the truth. You have to self-impose detention. Lock yourself up. What you mean by that, Dockery? Don't wait on the police to come lock you up. Lock yourself up. Here's what I mean. There are a lot of good people that have learned how to be helpless, waiting on somebody else. And they act out of impulse and become self-destructive in the whole process. So you sit down, you don't take care of business, you misuse your time, and then when you get hungry and then you got to jump up and run. And then before you know it, you're acting out of impulse, anxiously, and you cause yourself more problems than you need to. Like anyone else that want the conditions to change for the betterment in their life, In the interest of change, you gotta. I recommend that you impose detention on yourself. Who are you locking yourself up from? Your haters, people who dissent against your best interests, places that are not good for you, huh? Behaviors that are not good for your success, and they trigger your demise. Lock yourself up from those things. Keep yourself away from them. Two, you got to acknowledge something. Huh? I said you got to acknowledge something. Now, through the process of self-assessment, that's what a lot of us don't like to do, beloved. When it comes to us sitting down and really looking at ourselves in the mirror, accepting the good, somebody say in the bad. Many of us have a problem with that. Interestingly enough, this goes across racial lines. But I know my people have a hard time accepting the truth about who we are and what we are and what's going on with us. But the minute you do that, guess what you can do? You can make corrections when you acknowledge the reality of where you are. You can change your heart. You can change your mind. And you can improve your conditions. When you acknowledge that you got a problem, you can get it solved then. First, you lock yourself up. You impose self-detention on yourself away from certain vices and people. And then you acknowledge where you are. You make an assessment of where you want to be and what you got to do to get there. Number three, then you need to reflect. Reflect. Take the time to think about, as I was suggesting earlier, your realities, good and the bad, and what sort of seed or what sort of ground that you plant your vision, your dream on. Who you got around you? How did you set yourself up? See, because this is going to make a difference of where you wind up. What young people need to understand is that if you hang around or you keep up with the wrong company, it will shape you and make you guilty by association. These people have nothing on their mind and doing nothing productive. The tendency is for it to have a negative impact on you. Reflection. All right. Number four, instruction. Instruction. Be willing and open to learn. Because knowledge is power. Say that again, doctor. I said knowledge is power. Adopt the value of self-improvement and learning how to get better. Let this permeate in your heart and your mind and your family and your community. It'll make a difference for you. Hear me now and believe me later. Number five, you got to be strategic. What? Another principle. Establish the root of success. Strategic. Any organization, any business or group needs to write down its plan of action. If it's going to be able to make sure it is making the right steps and getting where it wants to be. This is how you ensure forward progress and ultimately success. If you don't write it down, how do you know the next day what you say you're going to do? Oh, you got a photographic memory, huh? Well, suppose something happens to you and you are relying on others to carry your vision. They don't know what the devil you done come up with. They don't know what God has given you. Because it's nowhere written. And as you write, you come up with an action plan. Day by day. Every day you ought to be doing something toward working towards your goal. That's how successful people become successful. They're not wasting their time day by day. And they understand that what I do today is going to speak volumes about where I'll be tomorrow. I wish I'll just walk with me now. Walk with me now. The last thing, the sixth thing that I want to leave with you, sixth thing I want to leave with you is action. What good is it to go through all of those steps, first five, and you don't act on it? Who are you waiting on to materialize these things for you? Whenever there is an organized operation, the seed that ultimately grows into that root can bring about the desired outcome of success. Beloved, all I'm telling you is the things that successful people, listen to me, I didn't say white people. I didn't say black people. I said successful people. That's what I said. This is what they do to be successful. Get out of this thing of allowing people to place you in a box to say you're a black man, or even you're African-American, a Negro, or whatever. Simply call me Mr. Dockery. That'll be good enough. You don't have to put no qualifier or an adjective on me. I can define and describe myself well enough. Just call me Mr. Dockery. See, that's a noun. That's a person. Yeah. That's how you do it. Success don't have no color. But there are best practices that I just shared with you that everybody that has been and want to be successful, if you follow them, guess what? They can work for you. Here's the operative word. If you follow them, they can work for you. But there's no guarantee that anything's going to work for you if you don't apply the principles and the information. As I promised you, here's this little group here that call themselves Nappy Roots out of Louisville, Kentucky. Young men, I think they may be on to something. Listen to them just for a second.
Shirley, and I was asking how many people in Clarksville was at her funeral. And I'm from Nashville, where you from, and I was listening to you, and before I was listening to your show, I was listening to Judge Joe Brown and Mr. Dockery. You talking about, I thought I cut up. Ooh, Judge Brown cussed the young dude out, called him a punk a while ago. MF punk.
What?
Yeah, Judge went off on that end. Yeah! I judged down in Memphis went completely. I thought I used to get off, but Mr. Dockery, don't say nothing to me no more. I judged, cussed the young boy out, called him a punk, sissy.
I see. Okay. I don't know what
the sissy. Hey, Mr. Dockery, can I throw something else at you? I'm going to throw something at you. I got a booklet right here that came from LaRouche. Now, I'm going to read it to you. The Coming of the U.S. Economical Miracle. And it's some three statements on inside the book. It says, make America good again. And another statement, it says, with Kennedy's assassination, has something in us died as well. And here's another statement. They have stolen from us the real American history.
Okay. All right. Well, now, I want to, because see, what I'm hearing you saying, I'm going to bring St. Louis in just a second. What I'm hearing you saying is that externally someone else has control over someone else's success. That's who the they are. And I really want to get to the point, Don, where we understand that don't nobody control your success but you. You may have to get some off of you. You may get some. You may have to get some folk off of you, right? But you're in charge of your success. You can either live, you can die, you can sink, or you can swim. It's on you, though. Now, some people don't even know how to start or where to start. I get that. This is why we offer those six principles.
Mr. Doctor, can I tell you, being the oldest son of the man called Amar from Selma to Montgomery, I got to be honest with y'all. I've been here 12 years, and I've been working. I've been making $25 a day. And the other night at the raceway on Highland, two European females working. Well, one of the European females' friend came in the other day. He's a state trooper now. But when I came, he was a local police with my brother. And I know my brother came straight up, stuck with my brother from Chicago. Well, the European girl told me they move your van. Then the old lady said, move your van. And what I'm experienced from them, that they KKK and that they goes to the Moose Club. And what I'm experiencing in Selma is, just like Joe Brown said, from Terry Sewell all the way down to Perkins, I experienced some punk-ass niggas that's a bunch of Uncle Toms that don't want to really fight for economic development for our children.
Okay.
That's what
I got that. Let's make this conversation largely done. You and I have been through some things. We got some hiccups and some bruises. Maybe other people haven't. But let's make this largely about how those coming behind us can avoid those pitfalls, right? Let's is that okay? Can we do that? Can we frame our conversation?
Yes, sir. I agree with you on that. I agree. Yeah. I agree.
We're about done. We're closer to the end than our beginning.
I'm 61. I agree. And Mr. Dockery, you know what scares me? That I'm going to die. And the information I got, they ain't even got it.
Well, that's what we're going to talk about tonight, big brother. Hold on. Just hold right there. Let me bring St. Louis in here. Welcome, St. Louis, to the discussion tonight. I think you have a sense of topic and discussion is roots of success. Any comments thus far?
Roots of success. Just look at the people who helped put this country together. That's success.
Okay.
And if someone say that this country is not successful?
Interesting. Now, expound on that a little bit, St. Louis. What are some of the things that someone can learn from that they've done that was successful? That can be replicated, if you don't mind. Can you expound on that a little bit?
Well, they broke away from what they had, and they came and they put together something that was more equitable. One has to read.
Okay.
They need to read. And then they would understand.
Okay.
United States of America is a great country.
Okay. All right. You know, I was telling a young brother today, as a matter of fact, he was a little upset by some things that were going on. And I said to him, I said, look, man, you know, there are about 350 million people in the United States now. And everybody brings something to the table. You know, if you deal with all of them, they'll drive you crazy. So you have to pick and choose what you're going to do. But to your point, St. Louis, if you are aware, you're familiar, and that's what reading does. It allows you to become familiar with information, knowledge, right, that you can use for yourself. You may not be able to, Don, get along with everybody in the process. And everybody may not see things your way. But what you can do is set a course for yourself, and if don't nobody else follow it yourself. Is that that's not too difficult, is it, gentlemen?
Well, your course should be your education.
Okay.
Education.
Okay.
A good education. Okay. Start rebuilding families and have what it takes to make a thorough family, including generational assets, like for real, I say again, for real, grandparents.
Okay. One thing that is missing, gentlemen, to a point that you're making, St. Louis, is there are a lot of young brothers who are procreating, who are making children, who want to do the right thing, right? But this concept of a family is it has been defined, particularly for the Afro-American subgroup since 1970-something. Andrew Billingsley and McAdoo does a great job, I believe, of talking about that. how it has been changed, and people have defined family for them. So the young cats are even afraid. They're afraid to say that I want to be a husband and a provider for my wife and children, because that's politically incorrect. You see what I mean? And that causes a problem.
Well, don't pay no attention to them. Why do you pay attention? Just leave them alone. Ignore them.
Now, who?
You waste time ignoring to such foolishness. And when they come around, you unwelcome them.
Interesting. Very interesting. Very interesting.
That's what I would do and do.
And Mr. Dockery, St. Louis makes a good point. What do they call success? What is your definition of success? What I see in Selma is not what I see success.
Okay.
I see some miseducated, so-called educated people. So guess what I see right now? They ain't got the common sense to put the first African-American congressman, historical markup, ain't got the respect or the goal. See? That's what I see while I'm in Selma. So what do you call success?
That is
a bunch of Negro, Black, and colored using European banks. Come on now. Is that success?
Well done. You have to set your own course, right? And success is manifested when you follow the protocols, the steps, the strategies that you laid out, right? And what you said you wanted and were going to do. When you get to the end of your journey, when you see the fruits of that, it materializes itself. That's success. You're successful in it. So that's really.
Well, I'm going to tell you a thing.
Okay.
I think blacks ain't going to be putting their money in no bank if it's black or whatever, because these people, look at Maxine Husband's bank out there with One United. In St. Louis, you had a bank there on Euclid and Delmar.
Okay, I know where that is.
One day, a helicopter came over that intersection. A line dropped down, and people lapelled out the helicopter, went in the bank, and took it over. It was a black bank.
What? Oh, wow. That's something, man. Well,
you damn right it's something.
We've had a number of, for the sake of our conversation, black banks in the Chicago area that were open. Yeah. I think at one point in time, it was like 6 or 7 of them, and it's only one that I know of now. And you ask the question, what happened? Here in Nashville, that's only one that I know of, that Citizens Bank, you know. But now, I'm going to tell y'all the truth. I'm going to tell the truth and shame the devil. Gentlemen, I went to them, and I asked them about the 1974 community development, right, and how they can help me with my nonprofit. And dude looked at me like I was crazy. I had to point him and reference him to what I was talking about. Now, you a bank. Now, all banks are supposed to participate in that. Just because you black don't mean you are excused from that. So what are you saying, Doctor? I'm simply saying that we have to make sure that we are doing right as well. Just because you black don't mean everybody have to support you. You still got to take your business and do things right.
Go ahead, well, I'm not, and I'm not saying other groups don't have your problem.
Yeah, they do.
I tell you what. In Manhattan, I think it's Manhattan, in like a 12-block area, maybe a little bit bigger than that, that's like 35 Asian banks. 35. They're in New York. Koreans, I think. I'm not sure. But it's in Amos Wilson's book, Blueprint for Black Power. He talks about it. I think it's in Flushing, New York.
Okay.
And Sheraton built a hotel, and it was directed at the Asians because when you go in it, all the theme decoration is based on their culture.
I see.
Here's another thing. Well, blacks get all mistaken. Not all, but a whole lot of them. Just because a bank is black owned, that don't mean they're going to go and give you money carte blanche. I want to start a business. What kind of business? Yeah. I want to start a daycare and a barbecue joint.
Okay, no problem.
All right, well, let's see what your plan is.
Okay.
What plan? I want some money.
No, let me tell you this, St. Louis. Jeff Ford, he's locked up now. He was able to convince a Presbyterian preacher to help him write a grant back in the 70s when Carter was in office. And he got a $500,000 grant. Reportedly, I wasn't there, but there are good references that that told the story. He went, and they deposited, the people that were helping him with the organization deposited them. Of course, it was in his name. He was the administrator for it, right? So he had the authority to pull the money out if he wanted to. They put the money in the bank. They deposited in the bank. Do you know he went up there with a briefcase and demanded that the bank give him all the money cash? He walked out of there with all that cash in that briefcase.
That sounds about right.
Well, no, come on. Don, listen.
Uh-huh.
It's important to understand that there are certain processes in business. Okay. Now, I don't know whatever happened to all the $500,000. Okay, but it was supposed to go to gang intervention. That's what it was supposed to do. Now, we saw for years how gangs still just got worse over time. They're still bad now in Chicago area. But my point is that to your point, St. Louis, if you're going to go, you should have a business plan. I talked about that in the money law, how it's important to have a strategic plan. And that's one of the things that a lot of my people, when you start talking about those type of things, you start talking about discipline, you talk about structure, protocol, strategic planning. I say this respectfully, that turned a lot of people off. They don't want, of a sudden they're not interested in it.
Mr. Dockery.
Yes, sir.
Number one, I wouldn't approach you like that in the first place.
Okay.
I'm going to tell you how I was raised by my granddaddy. I'm going to produce it. And once you see what I produce, then you tell me what I got.
That's a good thing right there.
You know.
I ain't going to ask you for nothing. I'm just going to do the damn thing.
Okay.
Then once you see me do the damn thing, you ask me what I need.
Okay. All right. 1 second, Zach. Go ahead, Sam. What are you going to say?
Yeah, that $500,000 was what they call Negro hush money. Hush money for the Negroes.
Wait a minute, St. Louis. Hold up, man. It was supposed to be a grant that stopped gang. It was a gang intervention.
Now how did he plan on doing that? Apparently, it didn't work.
Well, you know, they had what was called a fort on 39th and Drexel, and Daley, the mayor, promised him that he was going to shut it down, and he successfully done that. Of course, that was after Jeff Ford was locked up. Now, let me say this. The El Rookins, when they started, it was based on some spiritual principles that were very much related. Some people conflate them with more science teaching and things of that nature. And young
Desiree
people.
Desiree, he went to jail right there, Mr. Docker. Brother, okay. Brother Bonzo was looking right dead at it.
I'm just saying that it was a good idea from the beginning that what? Morphed in something that was counterproductive and destructive. That's what I was talking about in the beginning of the monologue, how you have got to put yourself in jail. What I mean by that, detain yourself, and St. Louis said this earlier, he repeated that, stay away from certain people, certain practices, certain influences that are going to be detrimental to your success. We're talking about the roots of success.
That's right.
I mean, you understand what I'm saying? Started out with a good idea, and it just, it was a Methodist preacher that, I can't remember that preacher's name, a Caucasian fellow who helped him to put it on paper and submit the grant and everything and use this church as a meeting facility. But Jeff had a different idea, man, a different concept. And
what was his idea?
Mr. Dockery, building on the wrong foundation is what I'm hearing.
Sure.
Yeah, what was his idea? What was he planning on doing? How?
I'm going to say this, St. Louis, and I know a lot of guys who they have natural good thought processes, but they don't have formal orientation behind it, right? So I think Jeff Ford did understand that black males in Chicago need not to fight one another in gangs and what have you. And I think he could have been a positive influence on them.
But how is he going to do that? You know, I hear people talk about
leadership.
These things. People talk about this stuff. People talk about this stuff. They don't never lay anything out tangible. How? I mean, if you're going to make a cake, you need eggs, milk, and cake mix, a oven, a bowl, spoon. All right. Now, so being that he was supposed to make an impact on alleviating, how was he going to do that?
He never – that was never clearly shared with everybody. Now, I think you can reference the grant. It's so long ago, over 40-some years ago. You can go and look at the grant.
He's still in jail?
Yeah, yeah. He's going to be there for the rest of his life. Well, now, St. Louis, now those young cats have really took it and turned Chicago into a bloodbath.
You know? It is.
And it was groups like that, he and Larry Hoover and others who started these groups. And the Vice Lords, those gentlemen started with great principles and over on the West Side. And I tell you, you know, and they were able
what
to.
What were they going
to
do? What were they going to do?
Now, hold on now. What they had is a program very similar to the Black Panther Party, where they were focusing on literacy, they were focusing on family support, they were focusing on education and economic development. That's what that original group, not this, these fellows now they call themselves, but the original group of Vice Lords. We're talking about done people like Goose the Thirsty,
Well, Mr. Dockery, when Thirsty and General Cabal and them died, them young guys went crazy.
It went to hell. That's right. And it's the same
Can
way.
Can I tell you something, too? Mr. Dockery, when you say that, it hurts me to even talk about it because I've seen Thurston and John Cabal literally sacrifice themselves during the Harold Washington thing and the World Baptist Center is there.
Sure.
So these young guys, they got it wrong. I even watched my brother come down here, man. It to me, it's just a disrespect because they don't understand the older guys and those guys, how they sacrifice.
Well, Don, let me show you.
That's mean the five banking institutions ain't even there. I'm with my brother right now, James. How you going to come down here in Selma, get with a bunch of good old boys and come against your brother, a block from your mama's house, Seaway Bank was there, and James Orange did a bank in. And you come out of the Navy, you ain't never been around your dad to even teach that, but come down in Selma, holler, you ain't looking at you. You see what I'm saying? These young guys is off the chain, man. They don't respect what the elders did. That's what I'm saying.
Consider this. I think you in St. Louis will be able to identify what I'm talking about. When we look at the pretext of Eldridge Cleaver, right, and CEO, when they started the Black Panther Party, they weren't about no gang banging and violence. They were about social programs and self-help ideas, right? But what got conflated was when they stood out and they acted on their constitutional right to defend their interests, and they put on the black leather jackets and the Tams and what have you, that got conflated because it made them look like they were angry and violent and vicious. And young cats bought into that and never got the principal ideas that they were teaching. Y'all see what I'm saying, gentlemen? Now, and that's the only fault I have of the various movements that we can identify that started 40, 50 years ago. If you don't have a solid process by which you can write the vision, make it plain, and have it in place for generations to come to understand what and how to do, I'm not here to judge them, but we're reflecting now. This is an academic discussion, you know, because there are still groups right now, St. Louis, one of them, bless their heart, is Black Lives Matter. The supposition of the founders was everything that was done before us is no good, should be washed away, and therefore we are the ones who should lead in the vision of defining how Black Lives Matter. And you see where that's taken. Y'all see where
that's taken. Well, them people are a bunch of common
women, Mr. Dockery.
I know that, Don. I know that. Say, Louis,
one lady that was with them. Her name is Can't think of the name. Rosenberg. The name is Rosenberg.
Okay.
And she was an accomplice in getting Chelsea McIntyre escaped from the jail in Philadelphia. You remember her, don't you? Chicago Secure, and she escaped to Cuba.
Yes.
And that lady got 58 years in prison.
Mm-hmm.
And Bill Clinton let her out.
Right. I remember.
And
that.
She's involved on the board of Black Lives Matter. Black Lives Matter, them people, is nothing more than some Marxists, and their premise is to what Marxism has always done, going back to the 50s with the black people, is tear down the United States.
But now, can you see how that came to rise, though, and why? Because of brothers who started good ideas, right, that had the potential to manifest itself into proactive change and success, because their efforts or their vision failed. It left room and opened the door for an anomaly or some sort of mutation of thought. You understand what I mean? They're not the only one. They're not the only one. Go ahead, Don.
Both of y'all are teaching me something right now that I didn't even know. So y'all let me know what Rose Sanders really doing. and it's really sad. And somebody should put her in jail. See what I'm saying? You should go to jail. And then the other sad thing, Mr. Darker, when you send me over there yesterday, and I told you what the brother said around the corner that's kin to one of them that's in that law firm, they should literally be locked up in jail. Now, the people that well, like I just read, LaRouchnim, you know what LaRouchnim told me about down in this area right here?
What's that?
The FBI is corrupt. So that means that the federal government ain't prosecuting people that's both being leadership position, and our children are getting destroyed.
Right.
What's going on?
Right.
Literally killed. Right there in front of Selma University, I say in the last 5 months, go come down and look at the statistics of murder.
Right.
Well, it's sad, Mr. Doctor. Somebody should go to jail.
Okay.
But no, what they doing is just wiping it. And Mr. Doctor Wise might be tonight. I might get assassinated, just even saying it. But somebody needs to go to jail.
Right. Well, listen to what I'm saying, Don. And I want to make this clear. We're talking about the root of success. I have had the occasion as a candidate for political office to engage individuals. I'm specifically talking about young folk that identified themselves or being associated with Black Lives Matter and this philosophy. And I explained to them that there's a problem with it that I don't believe you really understand. And as a student of history, I understand how things got twisted for them. And that's what my whole point of this whole thing, that to this day, as people try to move forward to 2022, you know, some of them are trying to figure out, well, dang, we lost everything and we seem not to have any control over major life decisions for ourselves. How do we find success? So you ask the relevant question, how do you define success? And that's where we have to pick up the pieces from. So, I don't want to get into a battle over people who say they black life. In America, guess what? You got a right to be that if that's what you want to be, as long as you don't break the law. You understand what I'm saying? However, you should be aware of who, what, when, where, and why, because that goes back to what St. Louis reiterated.
But the law has already been broken. Mr. Trump put out some money there. Somebody done got some of the money somewhere, because Mr. Biden done come cut back $2 billion. He just wouldn't just cut back.
No.
Somebody done been finagling the money, and guess what? What I see, ain't nothing really been done with the money.
Well, and
Biden cut back.
He sure did.
Biden cut back on the historical black colleges and universities. And Trump made it possible for them to have money for 10 years, didn't have to go every year begging.
This is the question I want to ask you all, gentlemen. Stay right there. This is the question I want to ask you all. President Trump gave them 10 years of funding. 10 years. That's a whole decade. Why did they need any more money? Help me with that, y'all. In fact, I understand he told them, I may never see y'all again after I give you this, because the most I can get is 8 years. So why did they, if they were using that money wisely and budgeting it properly over a 10-year period, why they need to ask for any more money when Biden came in? Can y'all help me with that?
Pardon me?
Why did they need, why did the HBO, I mean, I'm,
now, but it wouldn't y'all, mean none if they budgeted correctly, Mr. Dockery. And
go.
If they invested correctly.
There you go.
If you invest
well,
that type of money
you.
Correctly, it'll generate more money.
Uh-oh. Well, let me tell you what company they need. And see, really, it ain't just for blacks. Because whites go to those schools, too.
Some
matter of fact,
the
baseball teams are nearly all white.
Go ahead. St. Louis, you there? We lost your sound there, St. Louis.
No, I'm back.
Okay.
My grandson asked me a question.
Okay. You got the floor.
Well, what I'm saying is that the reason why come, it's several reasons why come those schools are not going well. One is because of the academic performance of the students that go there, because they're not prepared for that type of rigors. Second, blacks are overrepresented in low-paying majors. What happens when you don't make much, you are in a profession that don't pay much? You just barely make it. Well, you don't have no extraordinary funds to create, or shall I say, contribute to the endowment of the school.
Interesting. Okay.
And
okay.
Then, too, your smart people, young people, students, don't go to those schools because they can't be challenging them.
Mm.
There's nothing more aggravating than to be in a classroom where you're the smartest one, and everybody else, when a question is asked, they don't raise their hand, but you do. So you want to be in a challenging atmosphere. You want to have the best of instructors who would challenge you, and you want to have a school that has resources.
Okay. I see where you come from. Now, let me just say, gentlemen, in defense of HBCUs, I'm a product of one. My wife and I both are products of Fisk University.
What school did you go to?
Fisk University. Now, when I came out of that, I was saying, thank you, Lordy. She came out of there, cum laude. But I was saying, thank you, Lordy. But so I'm just saying, I have a heart for, I do think, though, and I've been saying this for a long time, Don knows this, we could do better. Fisk, Meharry, TSU, American Baptist, particularly right here in Nashville, we can do better.
Mr. Dockery.
Yes, sir.
I think we got enough challenge right now before us. You know what I'm saying? I'm going to say again. Mr. Dockery, listen to this. You know whose son I am. I'm 61 years old. I'm going to say something, y'all. That fifth congressional district with Fisk, Tennessee State, American Baptist, Irene just died. Her great-great-grandfather was Green. He fought in the Civil War, and he was a blue coat. Right
he
there in Nashville. What's wrong with all them, like Mr. Joe Brown said, punk-ass Negroes that refuse to stand up and be the man that they need to be to take over that what? Government. Government is a responsibility. So what are the brothers doing?
Well, now, if you've been convicted.
Don, the Civil War was over 135 years ago.
The Ku Klux Klan mafia runs Nashville. The Civil
I'm
War
talking
ain't
about
over.
The Civil War.
What's wrong with the brothers in Nashville that cannot stand up against that Ku Klux Klan, Scottish Rite Mason mafia there in Nashville?
Hold on, what's wrong with the brothers?
They don't want to get their butts whooped. That's what's wrong with them.
Okay then.
Well, or perhaps.
Be truthful now.
Hold on, perhaps, Don. Perhaps it's the case that you have a generation who have not been raised to think like that. Let me refer you to what Willie Lynch said. Some people denounce it, but I think it makes a lot of sense. He says that if you take a woman and you negotiate her such that she raise her male children to be physically strong and mentally weak, they'll be good for economic production. Could that be a factor, Don? That what has happened is over a period of time.
Well, the thing is, that ain't all people, all black folks.
Yeah, I'm not saying that.
That stuff falls
under. I ain't saying
and the ones that's not doing it, probably they can't do it. That's probably why they either don't want to or they can't. But you know one thing that amazes me? how you have so many black folks like to talk about the times when they was getting their butts whooped. I ain't never understood that.
Well, that's a vital part of who they are, Sam. That's part of the experience, sir.
Well, do you want some more butt whooping or what?
No, but that brought them here, sir, and that's the driving force for them is to recognize that.
And Mr. Dockery, listen to this. I know Barack Obama and Jesse got the same workshop I got. So why you get on TV and play the class game when you live in space, energy, elements, and motion, Mr. McMahon? You see what I'm saying?
I know
they was taught the same thing I was taught.
I understand what you're saying, but Don,
now y'all might not know that, but I know that.
All right, Don, this is October 26, 2021. What we can't we can't control those people. We got to move forward, though, without them.
That's right. And then the question comes to Brock and Jesse, why come they didn't teach our young folk how to charter their own banks and be economically independent?
Whatever they did, Don, it's on you, me, and
yeah, why have they done it?
Well, whatever they did it, whatever the reason was, it's on you, me, and anybody else who believe that needs to happen to make that, put that in place. Because what we're not going to be able to do, Big Brother, is to reverse the hands of time. That time is gone. It ain't never coming back for us again. Never. But what we do today is going to have a tremendous impact on where we are 10 years from now. And those who we say we're stakeholders and, you know, we're interested in help building and so forth and so on. That's all I'm saying.
It's simple. Poor people that is heavily on those child credits that's not educated, is not a family, they don't have no money. They use banks for cash checks. That's it. Some of them go to the liquor store and cash the checks. So they don't have enough money to put in those banks. Yeah, but they don't have enough money to put in a bank.
But how do you charge? How do you do it? What is the mechanism to it?
Mechanism is, you're supposed to offer services. You're supposed to offer services like platinum credit cards, where every time you make a purchase, a percentage of that goes toward credit to that card. I know some people's got credit cards that they have accumulated over $3,000 in bonuses, where they can use that to pay the bill or buy something. They want services in a bank.
May I say this, gentlemen? Y'all are hitting on something that's key. I think y'all are going the right direction. My producers and I, my insurance agency, we have a strategy to promote life insurance to young people, because that is the best age, anywhere between 21 and 30. That's the best age to get insured. But what we're telling them is that you should be thinking, very similar to what you all are saying, about a whole life policy that's indexed, that will allow you to produce interest and make residual income for yourself and set up early retirement, right? And free yourself from debt and things of that nature, St. Louis, what you're talking about. You're correct, because last week we had a gentleman on Thursday night that was talking about the rule of 72 with banking and how they use that to make money off of you, and it takes you years before you can even see a return on the percentage that you've been promised because of having your money in the bank. So it's a lot of factors there, St. Louis, a lot of factors. And that's important that we have those conversations as well, because you're right, most of us, and I've been guilty of it myself, when it comes to us having disposable income, it's very limited because we're oftentimes living paycheck to paycheck, and that's a matter of discipline that can change that. Am I wrong on that?
Well, first of all, you got to make the income that can offset your expenses to have something left over.
That's true.
If you don't have the skills to sell, then you ain't going to have that income.
He just made one point. Mr. Dockery, I don't think he hurt you. Do they have the discipline?
No.
I got kinfolk right there in Nashville, jealous harder than me. They go pull concrete, and guess what? $1,600 every 3 or 4 days, you go pull all this major concrete for major people right there in Nashville. Then you smoke it all up in crack.
Correct.
Well, those people crazy, Don.
Crazy.
Well,
they crazy.
I got cousins smoking $800-$900 every 4 or 5 days and crack.
Watch this.
Right there in Nashville.
Well, watch this, gentlemen. When you think about businesses that operate that may not be formally incorporated, such as a barbershop or a salon or something like that, I'm not knocking them. But basically, they receive a lot of money cash, right? And the promise is that they're going to pay their taxes. They're going to do it quarterly, semi-annually, and so on, right? But the reality is there's an opportunity for them to majorly invest because there's a lot of lucrative finances that come their way, churches.
Well, they ain't going to be able to invest too much because Joe Biden want to know every time you get $600.
They changed it now, St. Louis. They said $10,000. But all you have to do is to pay your mortgage for so many months, and guess what? That's going to be $10,000 coming out, and that will give them the excuse to snoop in your account. Anyway, that's a whole other conversation, St. Louis. But, yeah, I mean, what I'm saying, gentlemen, is when we talk in the context of success and the roots of success, there are some principles that can be applied even to people who are on who have limited income. That's what I'm saying.
That's true.
It's going to require discipline for them to change their values first and then their practices on how they make money and how they use the money they make. I always
and then
believe.
Right there in Nashville too, Mr. Ducker, don't forget this. They're selling their folks' land, and your parents is what? Land is inheritance from the Lord. You sell it.
No, that's the truth. That's the man. Good gracious.
Well, let me ask you something.
Yes, sir.
You know them black people out there in California got that beach back, right? Do you read that story?
The beach, you say? What was that now?
Yeah, apparently they lost a beach. They lost some beach property.
Oh, wow.
Years ago.
Okay.
And the mayor and the governor turned it back over to them. People were complaining that the state swindled them out of it. Now, here's the thing. What they going to do with it? It's 15 acres. What they going to do with it?
Wow.
I think he gave them $75,000 or $35 million or something like that. I forget. But what they going to do with it?
I don't know. But
and
I
if
mean,
they build a resort and Wade White's is pissed off, I don't think they're going to be going there. So you know Black's not going to go there. I don't think.
I suspect if they were Indian brothers and sisters and had that.
No, they was Black Americans.
You missed me. I said I suspect if under the condition that they were. What they would be looking at is building a resort and hotels and finding a way to attract people there. Now, I don't know what the brothers and sisters going to do. They got it. I don't know.
Now, let me say this.
Okay,
there are a couple nice black resort hotels in the Carolinas. I can't tell you exactly where, but I know they exist.
Okay.
Very nice and beautiful structures in that.
Sure.
But like I say, that lady done something with hers. And all of them. And, you know, that's why I like to talk about the solutions and what people have taken on as solutions rather than talking about the bad all the time. Because everything is not negative within what you call black society. But that which is just too much.
That's the problem. It's not the good stuff that bothers us, St. Louis. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. My children sent my wife and I for our 26-year anniversary to the Poconos Mountains. And in there is a bed and breakfast that is owned by a brother and his wife. The wife used to be the editor for Ebony Magazine. She and her husband decided to take their earnings and their money. They have 5 bed and breakfasts throughout the East Coast. Beautiful place. And, you know, it looked like some place that some people would assume was owned by white people, you know. But I said that to say that you're right, St. Louis. There are examples of successful people. And a good question is, man, how did you do that? What can I do? Don, that's where the banking come in at. You've been trying to tell us what it takes to start a bank, right? But it's going to be a lot of discipline, man, and a lot of mindset that got to change. Because you can't just jump up and say,
well, why
don't
they start a bank in a white community? Why come it always got to be black community?
Well, because
black
we
person
don't
got enough gumption to start a bank, they should start a bank in the white community.
But
why they got to start in the black community?
Let me answer that for you. Let me answer that for you. The purpose of the bank is to have a reservoir by which your money can stay in the community for the group of people that share the interest and the value of it. That's the purpose of it. And if you're taking it to a white...
The next generation.
And if you're taking it to another area outside of your community, that money tends to recycle itself in that area, not in your community. So it kind of defeats the purpose of it being...
Well,
no,
that ain't what I'm saying. I'm saying
okay. Open
up a bank in a white community, and the people in that community will use the bank.
But
you also have blacks and Asians and everybody else that's living in that community.
I get that, but I think you missed the key point of having it in the black. Now here's a challenge today.
Well, you want to be successful, don't you?
Yes, you do. Yes, you do.
St. Louis. I got something to tell St. Louis. St. Louis, don't you know I met a brother today? I'm going to say something. He associated with a gang. And I happened to be passing out the pamphlet for what I was telling you, Mr. LaRouche. And we got into conversation about Alabama Penitent Savior. He didn't know nothing about it.
Mm-hmm.
But once I told him, he got to thinking. See? So that's what Mr. Dockery's talking about. If you never introduced it, and nobody introduced it to our children, and like I said, we had these knuckleheads like Brock and Jess and them, you know what I'm saying, that never got down to the root of the problem. I'm listening to Mr. Dockery. You know what I'm saying? And I certainly agree with you. If we don't go in there and love our people, you understand what I'm saying? Really love our people. Love them.
Huh?
It ain't about money. Listen to this, Mr. Doctor. I'm going to say something to St. Louis. Seek God's kingdom and his righteousness first and labor not after riches first. Love our people.
Well, see, here's the thing. When people get paid, their money is usually deposited into an account.
Okay.
Now, here's the thing. That's better than a check, because when you work for some of these characters and they give you a check, you got to sprint to the bank.
What are you saying, St. Louis? It's rubber.
Because that check may not be no damn good.
Uh-oh. Okay.
What I'm saying is that so you got a black Congress. Well, let me ask you this. Why did LeBron James put his Blaze pizza out in the white community? He didn't put it in the hood in St. Louis.
I think it's fair to say
he
that
he put it
where
he could make some money.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And I think it's fair to say
So the same thing would be with the bank.
Well, wait a minute now, St. Louis. LeBron apparently, I can't speak for him. But obviously he put it there and that's where it is. I don't know how many African Americans go to his pizza place. It is what it is, man. I mean, as a businessman, you have to make that decision, though, right?
And then you got to look at it like this, too, St. Louis. Do he love his people? Even do he love himself?
Well, yeah, he loves his people. Apparently, his people is Americans out there where he put his the pizza place.
But see what you're saying. Let's go back to it, St. Louis. No. You know who you're talking to, don't you? Do you love
I'm
your
talking
people?
To Don, and Don, I'm going to tell you something. You
I'm
go,
talking
you
to
keep
you,
hanging,
do you love
they keep
people?
Hanging on to that I love my people stuff. You're going to find yourself broke and out on the street.
I'm already broke. Hey, listen to this. Wendy came right here, and the chief, Zulu chief, know my dad, and I'm sitting right here behind PNC Bank, which is above Pits and Pits. I'm looking at their law office right now, and I'm looking at some guys kind of like Italians. Fixing the law, the bank thing right now. So I'm saying to you, what you talking about now? Come on now. Jesse wasn't down here. So where's the bank at? Where's the chart at? Where's the economic department at Selma University? Do you love your people?
Well,
do you love your people? Are you
done?
Just talking to
you? You know, I've never known no Selma University. I've heard people, I know Selma. I know Selma had
you
a university.
You need to come down here. And listen to this. Even when Alabama Pennies and Savings came out of Selma University, guess who collaborated with W.R. Pettifor? Booker T. Now, listen to this, Mr. Dockery. Reverend Bevel's last child mother's up there in Tuskegee doing seed, but she don't even know that. I do. Why I know and Erica don't know.
Okay. That's a whole nother conversation, Don. That's a whole nother conversation.
Yeah, you want to have a bank.
So that's what I'm saying. St. Louis, do you love your people? Is it just a show? Is it a front? Or what is it? Do you love your people?
A bank has to offer services, like, for instance, debit card.
Okay.
With no minimum. Or you could put, say, $1,500, and you don't have to face no monthly charges.
But then I'm going to ask you a question, St. Louis. Who's going to keep the young folks out of charter banks?
Hold on 1 second. Let them finish, Don, then you can get back with it.
So here's the thing. If you got a bank in an area that people are not making deposits of any substantial, it just uses the cash checks. Well, when you go to try to get a debit card there, they're going to charge you some tremendous fees because all that stuff costs. And they don't have the money to offset it in good loans and other investments.
Right. Well, and if you have a situation where, you know, most banks want you to keep a certain dollar amount in your savings and in your checking account, and they penalize you if you go below it. Well, the idea there is that basically what they're doing is investing that money in the market. And the bank is not profitable if you keep your bank is low or is always negative and things like that. They're not making any money off of you. That's why they're prone.
Then they charge you $35 for every overcharge you make on your debit card.
But now, so gentlemen, a bank, just like a business, is not a small thing, right, to deal with. It's not a small endeavor to engage in. So what really, before we start talking about that, Don, don't you think it's important that there be counsel and instruction on the change in the mindset and the value base, Don?
I certainly agree. Mr. Doc, that's when I kept asking him. I would listen to what he was saying. And St. Louis, I could get real deep, but I probably would be dead. But I'm going to say something to you, even right here in Selma. You'd be surprised what I know. Right now, you'd be surprised.
And well, I tell you what, you know more than I never been to Selma.
St. Louis. Before I came to Selma, I'm going to throw this out there because I know the big boys are listening. I came here advocating the bank through the radio. Cahaba Bank came up. All right?
Okay.
So St. Louis, what are you talking about? What are you talking about? There is economic power within our community if somebody teach the young folk at Selma University how to set up an economic department and how to charter a bank.
Here's the thing. How many people you got at the university?
How many people you get think around that school? How many African-Americans
How many you got in this in university?
Do you know what the population of the school is? The student population name.
Right now? Oh, they don't run them away because of COVID. Thank you. Hello.
If they got 10,000 students.
So the boss
knows
how to play the game now.
Hold on, Don.
If they got 10,000 students in the school, there ain't going to be no 10,000 people getting involved in no bank.
They're 10,000 in the Dane County. And guess what? St. Louis, the stuff you talking, if I brought you a book right now of the high schools here and let you see what that's in that book, boy, you'll be quiet.
But what I'm telling you, all them kids ain't going to be starting no bank.
No, I know it ain't because you don't want them because you don't love them. You don't even love yourself.
I ain't got no. I can't love more than their own parents.
I met you now, doctor. I heard you very well.
Okay. Wait a minute. Right. I can't love them more than their parents do.
All right. All right. 6
but
5
Louis, you got to love yourself.
383.
I'm listening.
0944. That's the number to call. We're open. We still got another about.
Where is Peoria and that other lady?
I'm not sure, St. Louis. I'm not sure. But we're here. We're here, man. We're here.
Yeah, we got 3 men here tonight, and God did something.
You guys.
1, 2, 3. Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost. Come on now, St. Louis.
Oh, man. You all are bringing some great information, I think, and it's relevant to this concept of the root of success. If I might, gentlemen, give me a second to just kind of rehash some principles that I laid out that are kind of like the tenials of a root that reaches out and supplants itself in rich soil. Now, what you all are saying tonight, if I could use this illustration, is that if you got bad ground or bad soil, nothing you plant there, no seed you plant there, has a chance of being successfully grown. That's what I'm hearing y'all really say. And I agree with mm-hmm. that, which begs the question, you know, as we discuss this, what is the process of nurturing that soil, tilling it and propping it such that it can be fruitful? You know, that's a good point. You all are right that ain't no need to put nothing somewhere that's not going to grow, right? But the things that I shared earlier in the monologue, the six principles I suggest they are involved basically removing yourself from people and things that will block your vision and your forward progress. That's the one thing. Then acknowledge and assess yourself and acknowledge where you are. Don't lie to yourself. Be real. Tell yourself that if I want to make 10 steps and I'm already 5 steps back, I got to work a little harder, right? And then reflect on your circumstances and those realities and what is it going to take to get where you want to be. And then be open. This is one of the things that I find difficult. Be open to someone sharing with you information, knowledge that can help you bring your vision to fruition. But this is the piece that we talked about earlier, having a strategic plan. If you're not going to have a business plan written out, you won't even be able to keep up with your best ideas. Let me say that again. Without a written business plan of action, you won't be able to keep up with your best ideas. And that's what happens with a lot of particularly a minority African-American businesses. The National Chamber of Commerce suggests that because they don't have a good process of filing or process of keeping up with documents and things of that nature, they don't last beyond that 3-year threshold. And that's one of the things that they found for. And then after the strategic plan, lastly, taking action on those things. And gentlemen, if I could bring us back into that frame of thought tonight in terms of the root of success. You can be successful. Anybody can be. It's not about your color. It's not about the zip code you live in. It's not about what you've been through or where you've been necessarily, but it's about you following certain principles of success. They ain't got nothing to do with your color either. I said you can be purple if you wanted to, or pink or orange. It don't matter. If you do the right thing, you can be successful. And that's the point. That's the point. Let me ask you all this question now. And I know we've had some spirited conversations here. let's take color out of it. For a second, gentlemen. Let's take race and color out of it. If you had individuals who were brought from two totally different social orientations, ethnicities, but they were faced with the same challenge, what's the chances of them, both of them, being successful at overcoming that challenge? Brought from two different social orientations now, or ethnic orientations, what do you all think the chances of both of them being successful? Or is there another variable that we're missing here? Y'all understand the question?
Well, here's the thing.
Yes,
success.
I do, Mr. Doctor.
Okay, one second.
Yes, down. Success and color. Success and failure happens to everybody.
Okay.
It's not assigned to any one particular skin color. It happens to everybody. You just don't hear about it. Whites suffer. Whites lose all the time. You know, why do you think that as long as black people have been talking about slavery and saying whites, telling whites what they don't done to what they done to them, why do you think whites don't pay no attention to it?
Well,
you know why?
It's
because it don't. It's they not talking about them. See, black folks is talking about, yeah, y'all got over and you this, that, and the other because of slavery and stuff. Whites don't pay no attention to that because it don't mean nothing to them. It's not them.
I see.
You must be talking about somebody else. It's what's going on through their mind. And really, it is. The number of people that had anything white to do with that was about 3% of the population.
Interesting. Okay. Okay. Well, let me think Don then. Don was going to say something, St. Louis. He was going to respond to that. Don, what do you think? Do you think there's a difference, or do both of them have equal chance of success? Don.
I agree with St. Listen to this. St. Louis, I worked at the store with Mo, and I rode while he's from Yemen, and he's a brown-skinned man. You know, light-skinned, brown-skinned man. And guess what he said from coming here from Yemen? Opportunity and success is right here before you. Just take it. And I certainly agree.
Okay.
Our people, I agree. We don't get up. And his store, Raceway, guess how he was supplying it, Mr. Doctor? Okay. Sam's Club.
Sam's Club, huh?
And guess what? And I know he done made some money, too.
Okay.
I know he done made money.
Okay.
Okay. St. Louis, I certainly agree. But it had nothing with you. You understand? And listen to this, Ms. Doctor. Me being there this week with him, and him, you know, Mo's sick right now, and I'm there with his son. And his son taught me something at 61. You know what his son told me that night? He know them folk with KKK, the women with KKK messing with me. You know what he came to the store and said to me, Mr. Doctor? He said, Don, go on back over to the Washington. Sit down. He said, "Cause guess what? When it's all over and done, when she leave, I'm going to pay you anyway."
Okay. What?
Well, I agree with you, St. Louis.
All right. I want to make a point, gentlemen. I want to make a point here. One of the presidents that I think doesn't get a whole lot of attention, and in fact, Bret Baier, who was a anchor on Fox News, wrote a book. He got a pretty interesting book out about it. I just read a few excerpts from it, but it's about Ulysses Grant. And I bring him. Here's why I bring him up. I talked about how Frederick Douglass was central to really suffrage rights for Negroes or Blacks, African Americans. But Grant, a white man, for lack of a better word, in the context of our conversation, in 1860 and 1870, two major pieces of legislation that's a part of the U.S. Constitution now, that was the 14th Amendment and the 15th Amendment. This was under a white president, and he fought and advocated for that as much as he led the Union Army during the Civil War. And I think it helps understanding that to take the conversation, snatch out of the air the conversation about white and black and ask, what can you do with the opportunities that were made available in this period of history? Y'all with me? Go ahead.
How many soldiers lost their lives on the Union side?
I know it was 6,000, I think 6,000, about 250 or something like that, if I remember correctly. But
it was more than 6,000.
For the whole Civil War?
No, just on the Union side.
Okay, I don't remember the specific number.
It was about 400,000 on each. It was about 300,000 or 400,000 on each side.
Okay, all right. That's right. That's okay.
Now, here's the thing. Those were boys and men on the Union side. What were they fighting for?
To free
in the Union.
The slaves.
Well, actually, they were fighting to maintain the Union. Saying that's the correct
thing. Maintain the Union and defeat the Confederacy, and to free the slaves.
Okay, but
now,
here's the thing,
St. Louis. When we maintain the Union, let me St. Louis and the Articles of Association, and the seventh article of the Articles of Association, slavery been over since this country been started.
All those young boys as young as 14 and men who lost their lives, whose wives had to take care of kids without the husband. Mm-hmm. Who deserve reparations?
I don't know anyone does. I don't know anyone does, but that's a different conversation.
The white families deserve reparations for giving up and sacrificing their lives to end something that was treacherous to blacks at that time.
Okay.
But no, you got blacks today that say whites need to pay for reparation. Well, hell, they paid with their lives of their husbands and sons.
Okay.
That's right, to maintain the union. You're correct.
Okay. St. Louis, let's hear from Don. Don, now, what's your rebuttal?
You're correct, St. Louis. I don't disagree with what you're saying. The union, we got to really understand the principles what this country is built on. You see what I'm saying, St. Louis? And if you really don't understand the principles that this country is built on, you see what I'm saying? If you never
if people don't understand what the principles are, they lost.
See what you're saying?
Okay.
They lost. They listen to, they subjected to anything.
There are a lot of people who are lost in St. Louis. There are white people.
Sure
lost.
Is. Because white folks just listen. They don't say nothing. They don't even know the history themselves, a lot of them.
One of the things I say all the time, and this is speaking as a student of history, that to really appreciate the South and the Confederacy, you have to place yourself in the zeitgeist of their age, their experience, and their socialization, right? I'm not saying it's right, because much of it was, their whole economy was based on slave labor.
It was based on agriculture, but it wasn't all based on, because only 3%, listen, only 3%.
Mr. Doctor.
Only 3% of whites had any slaves.
No, but you do understand.
And they was doing mainly in cotton.
Okay,
so where's the produce in that had to be
you
grown?
Do understand, St. Louis, you do understand that a major part of the U.S. economy came, particularly in the South, from slave labor. You do realize import, export, and things of that nature. And in fact, the greatest threat to it was the industrialization at the turn of the century. And, you know, Harriet Beecher Stowe wrote a book about it, Phyllis Wheatley. They discussed it, and they say that set the template for the Civil War, really.
Let me say this.
Yes, sir.
Anything that was exported out of the country was not taxed. The United States didn't have no export tax. They only had import taxes.
Another thing.
They didn't have no income tax.
No.
So the federal government didn't make anything off of that.
That's not the point. That's not the point. The point is the individuals who profited from it. And we were specifically talking about the mindset of the Confederacy.
And then, Mr. Dockery, even though individuals, children have even profited off of it today, because I'm going to tell St. Louis something. My wife is over there, hold on, with that same Black Lives Matter crew, living in a house, and our parents is out on some of this land right now. Can't read and write, all right? And it's a whole community of them out there right now that's out there with beautiful black soil. Far as you want to see St. Louis, living in a little community called Sardis, 1st, 2nd, and 3rd Avenue, got a church community out there. And guess what? They don't own none of the tractors or none of the land.
To say that the United States as a whole profit off of slavery is far and not, because you only had a few people that was utilizing that type of labor. I tell you something else you can't say. You can't say all them slaves didn't get paid neither.
Why?
Because they
did.
Some of them had their own businesses. And always people saying that slaves bought their loved ones. Well, where did they get the money to buy their loved ones?
They worked for it. But now you're saying slaves had their own business in St. Louis?
Yeah, some slaves had their own businesses.
Help me understand.
Yes, sir. They owned their own businesses doing various things, whether it was blacksmithing, whether it was furniture making.
I have a book in my office entitled Masters Without Slaves. And the author, interestingly, kind of teetered to what you're suggesting. And that was after the 13th Amendment and the ending of slavery. These people, St. Louis, they still own the plantation, right, and the land and what have you. So in effect and by default, because they the former slave really didn't own anything and couldn't participate in the economy as it was, they were still working for them, and it was the plantation system, basically.
Well, slaves and
so
blacks, too.
Hold on one sec. So these people were masters without formally having slaves. Does that make sense?
Well, according to Dunn, there was no Bradstreet at that time. He kept records of that.
All right.
Was Dunn. Blacks had businesses going all the way back into the 1600s.
I agree. You're absolutely right.
Let me name some of them. Merchandise and real estate, especially merchandise and real estate. Lumber, merchant, real estate. Merchant broker, capitalist. That means that they funded other buildings. They had tailors, grocery and real estate, sugar planters, commission brokers and cotton, capitalists, landlord, tailors. They had undertakers. They had stagecoach drivers. They were in mining.
Right. But I agree with you, St. Louis.
And slaves had businesses also.
Sure. Well, so wait a minute now. What kind of businesses? Independent business? That's what I keep asking. Independent business?
Yes, they had their own. They had their own business. They might have been slaves in the daytime, and they came home at night and ran their own businesses.
I see. That's interesting. Okay, I was going to say one of the most successful Africans that were over here in the U.S. that were free was a fellow by the name of Jean Baptiste Dusabo. In fact, Chicago, he's accredited as being the founder of Chicago. But that was a good example of
Let me
business.
Tell you something else they done.
Okay.
Whenever a black plantation owner sponsored a settler to the country, they got 50 acres of land free.
Okay. Okay, and you're saying that was the basis of their business?
The plantation owner was black. And he, either black business, would sponsor a settler to the country, and they would get 50 acres. Now, some of those people accumulated as much as almost 1,000 acres that way. So they've sponsored a lot of white settlers to the United States.
Well, now let's be clear that all Negroes at the time, as they were aptly called, were not slaves. That's established at one. The slavery, the institution of slavery formerly existed within 14 southern states, basically. And those were the targeted states that really led to the Civil War, those that resented from the Union and so forth and so on. So, yeah, let's be clear.
Now,
that everybody.
Another thing. They were. You had blacks that were slave masters, their own plantation, owned anywhere over to 30,000 in South Carolina. But here's the thing, too.
We got something else.
People don't realize that, and they don't talk about that. Then when you have those groups like the ones that were testifying before Congress, they didn't mention nothing about no black slaveholder. That's the thing that pissed me off. They didn't mention nothing about
one,
no black
slaveholder.
I wanted
to pay your own people $25 a day. You got that going on right here, too. Go ahead.
Finish.
You correct?
Let him finish this point, man. Oh boy.
And see, here's and then they don't talk about the Indians that owned slaves. Indians were some big time slaveholders. See, when a merchant brought ships and unloaded them in South Carolina or down in the Gulf, anybody could have came up and bought a person. Mm-hmm. Anybody. It wasn't just to any one person. Anybody could have came up and bought a person.
You know how
and that's where it was.
Well, you know the requirement, though, right, to participate in the slave trade.
You need to have some money.
You had to be free, and you had to have a certain amount of economic wealth or resources compared to the person.
Lord, all you needed was money because engine. Now, in Africa, slaves had slaves.
Well, we know
where
that.
They came from. That's why people saying that all this stuff, these people were not being exposed to something that they didn't know something about already.
I got you. Well, we're not really getting into the conversation about slavery so much as it is.
Well, we're just trying to pull out the truth, which people don't want to talk about.
I agree with that. I agree with that. And part of that, St. Louis, is the subcultural conversation about the factual nature of our existence, our history.
What were 40 acres and a mule?
Sherman T. Was a general who came and part of his plan, part of his suggestion, was that if you give these former slaves 40 acres and a mule, they'd be able to establish themselves in the South. Now, some historians argue that them and the Freedmen's Bureau was more concerned about keeping them down South so they wouldn't come up North. But that's a whole nother conversation.
All right, let's talk about that. You know why Johnson did not go along with that?
President Johnson. Why?
Yeah.
Why
because it was Indian land.
In many cases, that's
Georgia
true.
Belonged to the Choctaw, a lot of, in the Creek Indians.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
And no land, because wait a minute, don't we talk about that? The white folks took the Indian land? So when the advancement of the North, when Sherman, it caused the white plantation owners to flee and left the land. So now he's saying, let's give this to the Negro. Well, the whites took it from the Indians.
Okay. Oh, well, I mean, there's no argument on that. We can credit Don's favorite guy, Andrew Jackson, the warrior, for the Trail of Tears, and we can describe that way. But so no question about that.
You know another thing. Indians had slaves because Lincoln could not free no slaves, not only in the southern states, but he surely wasn't going to do it in those Indian countries.
Well,
the five civilized tribes and others, they was referenced in the Constitution as being sovereign nations, which they were. So they told Lincoln that we ain't freeing our giving up our property. And some of them didn't until 1866 in April all the way up into, I believe, August with different tribes. And guess what they said to Lincoln? If you want us to give up our property, you got to pay us for it. Mm-hmm. And guess what they done? They did. The government did pay them. Matter of fact, one tribe, and I think it's the Choctaw, received their last payments in 1952.
Okay.
Now, you know, you mentioned the Freeman. Indians had slaves. And that's who the freemen were. The slaves that the Indians had, because they had to, they promised in the treaty to turn them loose, which they did. But not all of them. Because some Creek, like the Creek, Creek did not do it. During the Trail of the Tears, when Indians left out of Florida, they walked, but the Creek didn't walk because the Creek was very, very prosperous. They took boats, and they went up the Texas Panhandle with their slaves on steamboats.
Okay.
What you call Black Wall Street, that's Indian territory.
Well, we're not – okay.
I just want to put it out here because people don't even tell this story. And this is the last thing I'm going to put into it. That's Indian territory.
Okay.
The Creek.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
The Creek, what you call Black Wall Street, was the land of the Creek. It wasn't black folks. Now, it might have been some in there. And you did have some blacks come out of Chicago and help build some of those structures because they was used to building them in Chicago. Okay. But the land belonged to the Creek unless some way or another blacks bought it. I give you a good reference because they had what they called the allocations at that time. The allocation where you could be allocated, every member in your family was allocated 160 acres.
Okay.
If you had four members, that's 640 acres.
All right. So if I might say through the land grant process, the U.S. were giving land grants to individuals who would develop and help them with manifest destiny. And Oklahoma came into existence, and a fellow from Arkansas named O.W. Gurley went there, and he was a rich Negro, considered to be a wealthy Negro.
Yeah, you're right. In 1906, Oklahoma became a state.
That's correct. And Gurley went there shortly after and established what became known as Black Wall Street. And you're right, it was Native American territory before any European came there. So, I mean, and we can go all the way back to the...
it still is. Wait a minute. Well, it still is Native American territory.
All right. I ain't going to argue that. I'm not.
And let me tell you something, too. If you are an Indian, Creek, any of them, and the Oklahoma police stop you, they can't do nothing to you. They have no jurisdiction over them. They pull out their card, then they have to call somebody with the with the Bureau of Indian Affairs or the federal government.
Yeah, I think there's several
state of Oklahoma states has no jurisdiction over.
I think there's several states that their constitutions are based on that, where it's not as clear cut, you know, as other states, but. Okay. Wow.
Man. And one more quick thing. In 1979 and 1982, the Creek voted to expel all the blacks, you know, like Native Black America, who said that their ancestors were part of the Creek freemen that was let go, released. The Creek expelled them, and I think the Choctaw did too.
Okay. All right. That's very interesting. So let's we got about 13 minutes. If I'd like to force to for the sake of our listening audience and for those who may come back and listen to this recorded episode, let's bring it back in focus. We've been talking about the rule of success, and really what the focus of our conversation was is to make it known that anybody can be successful. However, there are what they call best practices or certain principle steps or procedures that the most successful people historically in the United States of America, that they follow. And today, this is October 26, 2021, anyone who begins to employ those procedures, those principles, they can be successful. They can be successful, particularly young folk. Now, what it's a bit disconcerting for me is how many young folk are distracted largely by social media. They don't have a clue where to begin looking for reality because they're so distracted with all kind of stuff out there. And that's
I got a friend. He's an airline pilot.
All right.
He's going to be co-founder of a company. That's in the business of doing aerial refueling. Aerial refueling in the air, because really there's hardly any companies in the country that's doing this. And of course they would get contracts from the Department of Defense and probably other commercial entities, like for instance maybe FedEx. When the airplanes leave New York, rather than land, they can be filled in the air.
Okay.
The reason why come they're able to do this is because they have either worked at it for somebody and had the experience, especially in the military.
That's a good point. That's a great point there. Yeah.
So they ain't saying that what the white man ain't gonna allow us to do and all that crazy mess.
Well, we're gonna get rid of all that. Forget all that. What about the white man?
By 2025, that business is going to be worth over $24 billion in market.
All right. Well, that's a good projection.
You see, Don don't fall asleep. See, that's another thing. You can't be successful if you're sleeping through the information.
He listens to you, Sam. What you got to know about Don, he may not be, and it's amazing when he's not speaking because he got a lot to say. But when he's not speaking, he listens.
Okay.
You've been sensitive. And I'm glad that's a good inroad. In these last few minutes, Don, give me a final thought here to kind of tie this
I'll see you later.
Okay, my brother. Give us a final thought that ties into our general discussion here, and we'll wrap up for tonight here. Don? Brother Bevel? All right. All right. So, okay. So we are grateful, and we've had what I believe is a very good, wholesome dialogue tonight about the idea that no matter what's going on, what has happened, and even some things that are going now, with the right planning and with discipline and consistency, you can be successful. You hear me target young people, not because I don't like older folk of my generation or older. As it is, that's where I believe we should spend our energy and our resources and focus on preparing them. A lot of them are misguided. Some of them are caught up in some destructive, counterproductive things. But with the right guidance, with the right examples and leadership, things can turn around for them. I believe that. And in all of our conversation, that's what we should focus on. There are a lot of different splinter groups, movements, and organizations that are around and about. And I wouldn't tell anyone that you don't have a right to be a part in them. But be aware. Be aware. And understand how that factors into your rights, your privileges, and opportunities as an American citizen. Having said that, we're going to wrap up our show. Just one last thing. Pastor Walla has been a little under the weather, so he hadn't been with us in the last few days, but we hope as soon as he gets back, he'll be back in the swing and join us on Tuesday night. I want to reiterate that Thursday nights now are going to be facilitated by Mr. Ben Shelton. Did a great job on this past Thursday. And I think he's scheduling it every other Thursday. But look for his announcements, and we'll also, when we can, make those announcements here on the Facebook page and the Blog Talk Radio show. Your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. We've been speaking from the topic, The Root of Success. And Lord willing, we'll be back on next Tuesday. See my ugly face again on next Tuesday, 7 o'clock p.m. for another episode of Talk Straight. I encourage everyone to hold your head up. Look straight. Stand up straight. You may not be feeling so, but just maintain yourself. Everything is going to be all right. Somebody say everything is going to be all right. In time, these things will manifest themselves, and they'll be clear to us, and then we'll have what we need to get past them and you know, make the difference here. So let me end with Nappy Roots, Po Folks, Anthony Hamilton is in here, and we'll see you next Tuesday.
Lazy see, average man when the rest was a shame to be. Nappy here and all, ain't no change to me. So up and wrong, downright wrong, I tell you, nobody ever gave us none. The tough time, it made us something different, stretch the road. New something to see, every state on the map, a different something to eat. Caps and handshakes, it meant nothing for real. Everybody making a killing, man, showing no feeling. Walking off collective pain, with the way of the world. Can't take it, so I guess I'm going to pray for the world. Sometimes I ask myself, what I made for the world. I bring this to you, and I say to the world, that we did, that we now, that before me. D.D. head over heels in this country. All my life been taught. But it really don't matter no more. And they wonder why we had it this way. Nappy boys gonna be okay.
I've been here all the while.
Everybody gets to know everybody.
Down home, good old-fashioned people.
It's country.
I like it. Nothing better than that, man.
I just love Kentucky.
All my life been cold, but it really don't matter no more. And they wonder why we have this way. Everyone's gonna be okay.
Even though I picture better days, I'm thankful for the chance I got to say amen. The Lord don't bless me with his grace. I wish his day would never end. We represent his home. Where we from, we build their own. All the show up on these presidents in hard times. They come and come and soon. Take them all. Now the chance to make it at all. With a thought, gonna be the one that's making this call. Lord, help me out. Tell me where I went wrong. I'm trying to find a right to tie. I've always been never been long. I gotta do it for my son's sake. Telling me daddy be strong. We gonna make it through these hard times. Even though they go when they go, you're absolutely right. But something happens. happened to me on last Tuesday night is plain to say, man-made. But this world trade, no, brave ain't the word I'm looking for, yeah. Better make it hope when nothing seems to matter, that's when, see, everything can go any which way. They got me folks, see, the Henny with the J, front post, chillin' roll, country folk, man, I'm nappy in my way, yeah.
I've been told, but it really don't matter no more. And they wonder why we have it this way. Nappy boys gon' be okay.
We're gonna be
all my life been told. But it really don't matter no more. And they wonder why we have it this way. Nappy boys gon' be okay.
Okay.
All my fellow friends and time, let's join hands. Got to go with the presence of being poor, man. I was only in order to survive for no man. Nappy got some brother reasons what we don't stand. Probably move from a juvenile to a grown man. You gotta take responsibility for your own, man. Golden and blurry morning, my sunrise, I love to hear my woman moaning. Damn, I hope you play these songs again. I'm not you just read my ears. I'm writing a lot of things for you, they just offended my leg. You've been searching for business. All my folks locked in the sentence, and it don't make any sense. Or I'm still just a sentence and broadcasting. That's why I'm writing these sentences. Along my end, time while I'm
going. All my life I've been told, but it really don't matter no more. And they wonder why we had this day. Now before it's gonna be okay.
Cleopatra was the most powerful woman in Egypt. But watching Prime Video, she realized rulers could give back. So she offered me gifts with Prime. Prime changed everything.
Let's begin now.